You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Victor Thorne, and we're going to be talking about a fascinating book, New World Order Assassins. And certainly it goes into all the people who've been killed and all the assassinations we've seen here over the last half century or more, and certainly whether it be John Lennon or Marilyn Monroe or Martin Luther King or Bobby Kennedy or Jack Kennedy or the attempt to assassinate President Ford or certainly George Wallace or right on down the line, certainly President Reagan. And yet, of course, behind all of these, it's obvious there's been conspiracies. These have not been isolated incidents. But of course, we're told, oh, there are no conspiracies. Ladies and gentlemen, there is a conspiracy. There are many conspiracies, but of course, they all tie together. And I think Victor brings this out beautifully in his book, that behind many of these, there are powerful, occult, and sinister, satanic, and demonic forces. Victor Thorne, thank you very much for being with us this evening.
Well, it's great to be here, Stan. I appreciate you inviting me on. And I look forward to our interview.
All right, fine. Well, I'm going to let you pick up the story. Where would you like to begin?
Well, this book, New World Order Assassins, is actually the third in a trilogy, a New World Order trilogy. The first was called New World Order Exposed. The second one was the New World Order Illusion. And then this third one, New World Order Assassins. So it took me about 7 years from the first one to finally get the third one out to complete the trilogy, but I did it. And it really filled in a lot of the pieces that I haven't written about in my other books or articles along the way. So it was, all of them subjects I was greatly interested in over the years. So I finally had the chance to put them all down on paper.
And I think it's vitally important that the people understand that the major thrust of American foreign and domestic policy is a new world order, basically. They're using the financial and military power of the United States to bring about this world government. This is what it's all about. That's why we have our troops stationed in 130 nations. That's why we have 800 to 900 foreign military bases. That's why we spend almost as much for our military as the next 10 largest nations in the world. We dominate the world. We have our troops stationed in Germany, almost over 40,000 of them, in Japan, over 30,000, over 20,000, certainly in South Korea. We have 11,000 troops stationed in England. Why do we have troops stationed in England? So we can control England as we control Italy with 11,000 troops. Troops all over the world. We are the empire. We have an empire, and we're moving towards this world government. Would you agree with that, Victor?
Well, it's certainly, we are the empire right now. I had this conversation with a couple different people over the last few weeks about the concept of empire. And what America is doing right now is really a pattern that's been set by all empires previous to it. So, when people say, why is America so imperialistic? Well, if you look at any empire previous to us, they were all imperialistic also. So it seems to fit, part and parcel with this idea of empire, that once you become the king of the hill, you want to spread your tentacles out across the world. And oftentimes, as I'm sure, Stan, is that once you spread yourself so thin like that, it ends up crumbling you from within, either through debt or just spreading yourself across the world, that you end up crumbling. And I'm afraid that's what's ultimately going to happen to America.
It is. But, of course, the average American doesn't want an empire. Mm-hmm. We want to live our lives. We want to be free. But, unfortunately, there's a small group that controls our country that has a different dream, because I believe they worship a different god.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients or the Mighty 90 needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 60 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So, now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 and the right ratios to promote good health? Youngevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack, which contains one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios to promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, one of the biggest stories out there, of course, is Benghazi right now, and how the United States, or the CIA, should say, is after they overthrew Muammar Gaddafi down there in Libya, they seized all his weaponry, at least 20,000 weapons. And what Stevens, Christopher Stevens, the ambassador, was doing in Benghazi is he was the one who is commandeering the transfer of these weapons from Libya into Turkey and then across the border into Syria so that the quote-unquote rebels in Syria could fight against Assad. So since the House of Cards was beginning to crumble for Obama, they needed these diversions. The first one was, of course, the Superstorm, which some people are saying was manipulated or engineered to sweep across the East Coast and into the biggest media market in the country. And now, all of a sudden, we have this sex scandal. And what it's doing is it's just pushing this point of conflict, which is Benghazi in the gun running and the attack on that embassy, pushing it into the distance, out of our memories, so that we focus on these other diversions.
That's absolutely right. And of course, going back to your book, I mean, you do a wonderful job of certainly trying to dissect what really happened. And then, of course, you put down all of the false information that was put out to confuse people. And whether it was with the murder of Bobby Kennedy, you know, and obviously open and close, there was a fellow named Saran there who fired at Bobby Kennedy and he died and that was it. But that wasn't the story at all. He was shot from behind and Saran was in front. Saran's gun held 8 bullets, and of course there were at least 13 bullets that were fired. Then the shot that killed Kennedy was fired from about 2 inches behind his right ear, whereas Saran was never very close to Kennedy. So basically they put out all this false information, and that's it, what they're doing today. That's what the General Petraeus issue is all about, and now the new general is involved. These are decoys to take our attention away from the really important information. And they've done this with every one of these engineered assassinations, as you point out so beautifully in your book, New World Order Assassins. But go right ahead. Why don't you sort of pick up the story? Because although I'd love to talk about General Petraeus, and maybe we could do that some other evening, because this is certainly an organized decoy. Ladies and gentlemen, certainly having an extramarital affair is wrong. No question about it. But why all this fuss? I mean, we never heard all this fuss when Jack Kennedy was sleeping with everybody there in the White House. And basically he had all sorts of girls coming out on a regular basis. Everybody knew about it, but they didn't talk about it. So why are we focusing on General Petraeus? Why was he forced to resign? Obviously, this is covering for something else, but that's another story for another night. Let's get back to New World Order assassins. Let's get on into the murder of Marilyn Monroe. Why was this carried out? What part did Marilyn Monroe play in the politics of our country, and why did they have to kill her?
Well, Marilyn Monroe, her story is one of the most fascinating of the last half century, and ultimately, I believe that she was murdered because after being spurned by John Kennedy, and then also by Bobby Kennedy, well, what Marilyn did was after JFK dumped her, he sent Bobby out there because Marilyn didn't want to be the scorned woman. So Bobby goes out to Hollywood. He starts having an affair with her. But Marilyn wised up the second time. What she did was she started keeping a diary of their quote-unquote pillow talk or their more intimate moments when Bobby would open up. And in this diary, she recorded events about the affairs of John and Bobby Kennedy, the attempted assassination on Fidel Castro, ties between the mob and the CIA, the Bay of Pigs fiasco, atomic test secrets, how Sam Giancana and Johnny Roselli, both mobsters, were on the State Department payroll, even CIA assassinations and how Bobby Kennedy planned on arresting and jailing Jimmy Hoffa. So this was bombshell material. And she threatened on the following Monday after she was killed, she threatened that Monday to hold a press conference and speak to reporters. Well, the Kennedy brothers knew that this would not only be the fall of Camelot, it would be the collapse of a presidency and maybe even an entire country. So they went out to Hollywood and took care of business, so to speak. All the gory details are in the book. And
What part did Sam Giancana play, the fellow from the Mafia? Was he involved with this? Because they were working closely with the Mafia.
Oh, absolutely. Well, what we had was Frank Sinatra, who was the biggest star in Las Vegas at that time. He was a pop star in the 40s and 50s, also an actor. And Frank Sinatra and Sam Giancana actually owned a lodge together. It was called the Cal Nevada Lodge. And this is where sometimes Kennedy and Marilyn would meet up for their little trysts. Well, there was also, I mean, I don't know how deeply we want to get into these details, but there were things that happened to Marilyn there where Sam Giancana and Sinatra were in attendance. They were horrible things that happened to her. And, you know, Giancana also was the man who arranged the vote scam in Chicago during the 1960 election, which ultimately gave Kennedy the presidency. And he also, you know, was involved at least peripherally in Kennedy's assassination then. So the Giancana was a main player in this orbit that surrounded Kennedy. And, you know, when you, there's even a book written, it's called JFK and Sam, the entire book devoted to Kennedy's association with one of the biggest mobsters in America.
Well, that is a fascinating, fascinating story. And of course, then Sam Giancana, though, got his own comeuppance, probably killed by the CIA, at least according to Sam's brothers, Chuck Giancana. All laid out in a book called Double Cross. You probably know that.
Yeah, I have that book.
We actually sold the book. We may still have copies of it. But basically, of course, there's no question that certainly the Mafia was deeply involved. In fact, Marilyn was having an affair with Marilyn, and that Sam Giancana was having an affair with Marilyn. Bobby Kennedy was having an affair with Marilyn. Jack Kennedy had an affair with Marilyn. I mean, poor Marilyn was certainly used by everybody.
Well, and Kennedy also had an affair with Judith Exner, who was the girlfriend of Sam Giancana. So, I mean, if you talk about playing with fire, John Kennedy, he not only stepped to the line every time, he crossed over the line and flirted with danger basically every day of his life. And, you know, the next chapter in the book then goes into a woman named Mary Pinchot Meyer, who Kennedy not only, that was his last big affair that he had during his lifetime, but he also did LSD with Mary Pinchot Meyer in the White House. She was good friends with LSD guru Timothy Leary, and she was also married before that to a man named Cord Meyer, who was a big CIA guy with James Jesus Angleton. So, you know, that's one of the things that's great about this book is that there's threads that weave through every one of the chapters. So even though it covers approximately 50 years, each chapter you realize that there's something from before that keeps continuing forward, and, you know, none of these events, Stan, as you know, happen isolated. They're all interrelated because they play off one another. And once the technique works once for these New World Order assassins, they repeat it over and over again because they know they can get away with it.
And the interrelationship between some of the families really are amazing. And these two mothers that knew one another, of course, one of them was the mother of Judy Morse, was it?
Judy Moore,
who actually tried to kill President Ford. And who was her boyfriend when she was very young?
Well, she was. She grew up with in the same town as Charles Manson.
Charles Manson. And their mothers were friends, weren't they?
Yep. Yes, they were. And interestingly enough, Squeaky Frome, who was probably the number one girl in Charles Manson's quote unquote family. Well, she escaped from the exact same prison that Sarah Jane Moore escaped from. Now, how often does this happen, Stan, where two women that try to assassinate the same president within 17 days of each other both were allowed to escape from the same prison? I mean, you get to a point where you realize that these prison escapes aren't just because they're John Dillinger's. It's because they're allowed to happen because they know that these are the patsies, and they have to allow them to get into a situation where then they can be incriminated.
Well, basically, I forgot whether it was a Moore or certainly Squeaky Frome, but they'd been picked up carrying a concealed weapon, just a couple of weeks before they tried to kill the president. Which one was that? And, why would you release somebody picked up with a concealed weapon?
That was Sarah Jane Moore, and this was the day before she tried to kill Gerald Ford. She was picked up with a .44 caliber gun and 113 rounds of ammunition. And she's released, and the next day, then, boom, she goes out and tries to kill Ford. Well, Sarah Jane Moore was also an FBI informant that infiltrated the SLA, the Symbionese Liberation Army, and I have a chapter on them in my new book that's coming out next month called Conspirality. So the threads still keep continuing even into future books.
And, of course, what most people don't understand is the close interrelationship between the intelligence agencies and the mafia and, of course, certainly these occult organizations. There really are occult organizations out there. Ladies and gentlemen, they infiltrate every aspect of our society.
And when we...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. And I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it. Taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging. Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now. 1-866-405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
You already know that calcium is important, but did you know that calcium cannot be absorbed without magnesium? That's a fact, and the calcium that isn't absorbed calcifies your soft muscle tissues. Haven't you ever wondered what's really causing all your muscle aches? I'm Pat Sullivan, the founder of Jigsaw Health. I created Jigsaw Magnesium with SRT to solve my own magnesium deficiency problems. You see, magnesium helps people feel younger because magnesium keeps the soft tissues from calcifying. This helps you sleep better at night and feel more energized during the day. Call 888-352-5050 and we'll explain why Jigsaw Magnesium with sustained release technology is so much better than any drugstore magnesium supplement. Mention this radio ad and receive $5 off your order. 888-352-5050. JigsawMagnesium.com.
Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest is Victor Thorne. And I was just simply commenting on the fact that there was a CIA contract psychiatrist. His name was Jolly West, Dr. Jocelyn West, but we always called him Jolly West. And basically, every place there was anything going on, there was Jolly West. And certainly he was actually asked to interview Jack Ruby, who shot Lee Harvey Oswald the day after the Kennedy assassination. And then there was, of course, the same Jolly West was actually invited to or ordered or told to interview Saran Saran, the man who actually supposedly had shot Bobby Kennedy. He didn't, of course, because, of course, the shots came from behind that killed Bobby Kennedy, not from in front where Saran Saran was. And then, of course, 10, 20 years later, why, the same Jocelyn West is interviewing a man named Timothy McVeigh, who was supposedly responsible for the Oklahoma City bombing. And basically, of course, he told three people. He worked for the government. He was a government agent. He told his sister that. He told Terry, whoever his partner was. Then, of course, he told his cellmate, David Hammer, who wrote a book called A Secret Worth Dying For. And the book is available. All three of McVeigh told the same story. He was actually working as a contract agent for the CIA, but that subject has never come out because, after all, the last thing they'd want the public to know is that they blew up the Oklahoma City bombing so they could get all sorts of new legislation through so they could control the American people. But you go right ahead. Certainly, I want you to tell our listeners about some of the major assassinations and what you've actually learned from studying them.
Yeah, well, it's there's so many of them in here that it's I would say this is one of the more entertaining books because it's all, first of all, high profile individuals. So it's everybody in the book is people that we're all aware of and accustomed to, Princess Diana and Ronald Reagan. And, you know, Ronald Reagan, here he was, you know, the powers that be actually wanted George Bush Sr. to be the president. But they realized that Sr. didn't have the charisma at that point. He never did have it, but he wouldn't have won the election. So they had to put somebody out there that did have the charisma that was able to relate to people. And so Ronald Reagan won the election, but they wanted then to put in George Bush Sr. right afterwards, who was his VP, and Reagan didn't even want Bush to be his VP. He was adamantly against him, but there's a story I tell in the first book of this trilogy, New World Order Exposed, where David Rockefeller and other elitists are at this banquet with Reagan, and they basically say, if you want the presidency, you have to have George Bush Sr. as your VP. So at that point, Reagan had to relinquish and say, okay, I'll take him on. Well, he's inaugurated in January of 81. In March of 81, 2 months later, here's Reagan already with an assassination attempt against him. And in this instance, John Hinckley, who was the fall guy patsy that was blamed for it, his family were very good friends, I mean very close friends with the Bush family. And again, similar to the Kennedy assassination, where Arlen Specter came up with this idea of the magic bullet, in New World Order Assassins, I point out or cite research that shows that the magic bullet in the Reagan assassination attempt was maybe even more ludicrous than the Kennedy assassination, if that's possible, and that the real shooters were positioned up on the roof of this hotel, which people have now come to call the Bushy Knoll, like the grassy knoll down in Dallas. So there's just all of these great stories in this book that, you know, a lot of things I'm sure your readers are familiar with, but also a lot of other details that, you know, kind of slip through the cracks.
Well, I thought that you described that rather beautifully. Certainly where Hinckley was standing, there was no way he could have shot Ronald Reagan in the left side. And obviously, he was shot either by somebody in the Secret Service or perhaps from the Bushy Knoll, doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. But basically, they wanted to kill Reagan, and fortunately, they didn't. We're a lot better off with Reagan in there than we ever would have been with George Herbert Walker Bush, because he was enough of a disaster. In the 4 years he was in, Charles Shepard Walker Boyce is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, of the Secret Skull and Bones Luciferian Organization, the Luciferian Bohemian Grove. He was director of the CIA, among other things. He was a real joiner, but of course, George Herbert Walker. Bush, certainly his dad, had been certainly working closely with the Nazis all during the Second World War, helping to finance them. And from his position with Brown Brothers, Harriman Bank, as Prescott Bush was even indicted, for collaboration with the Nazis. Of course, they bought off the judges, they bought off the prosecutors, and nothing ever came of it, which... Prescott Bush was indicted for collaboration with the Nazis.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today, 800-544-8927, 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap, it's a miracle.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for Prostate Support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
So you finally decided to start taking a vitamin supplement. Those chewables and tablets are fine if you don't mind paying for something that is only absorbed about 4-6%. However, a liquid supplement can have a 90% absorption rate if you choose the right one. Youngevity offers a wide variety of liquid supplements with a 90% absorption rate or more. Beyond Tangy Tangerine may be the best one ever invented. It starts as a liquid, then is freeze-dried like those instant coffees into a crystal. Then all you have to do is add a couple of scoops to water. No refrigeration, no fuss, no mess. Not only do you get a complete multiple vitamin, Beyond Tangy Tangerine also has minerals, and it tastes fantastic. You'll want to drink it all day long. So the next time you reach for a vitamin supplement, reach for Beyond Tangy Tangerine from Youngevity. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
This is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Victor Thorne. We're talking about his book, New World Order Assassins. Would you like to tell us the story of Mary Pinchot of Meyer?
Yeah, she was...
Because most really, people, I've never really heard of her before. So tell us about her. Why was her assassination important?
Well, she, as I said a little earlier, she was the last great flame of John F. Kennedy. And she had a great impact on his thinking because, as I point out in this chapter, she had befriended Timothy Leary, who was the tune-in, turn-on, drop-out LSD guru of the 60s, and she requested some LSD from him. Well, Leary gave it to her, and during one of their trysts in the White House, Mary Pinchot Meyer turned on John Kennedy. They also smoked marijuana once or twice also. But she started talking to him then about, you know, peace And why do we have all these maniacs in the world with nuclear weapons? And, you know, we have enough nuclear weapons to blow up the world 20 times over, and on and on and on. Well, Kennedy at that point then had a change in his thinking, and he said, you know, you're right. And he gave that famous speech at American University where he denounced the whole military-industrial complex and really wanted to reach out to not only Russia but to Cuba and to say, we don't have to live this way anymore. We don't have to live under this terror of a Cold War and kids hiding under their school desks when there's these nuclear bomb tests in the schools. And, of course, the war hawks were infuriated that Kennedy would try to chip away or diminish their military-industrial complex. So, in my opinion anyways, this is one of the reasons that, one of many, many reasons, that ultimately led to Kennedy's assassination. So anyway, now, Mary Pinchot Meyer was married before this to a CIA operative named Cord Meyer, who was influential in this program called Operation Chaos that ultimately infiltrated the peace activists of the 60s. Well, he also worked for a guy named James Jesus Angleton, who is the counterintelligence chief and one of the most fascinating men in spookdom there ever was. Well, Mary Pinchot Meyer's sister was married to Ben Bradley, who was the publisher at the Washington Post, who ultimately brought Richard Nixon down then, a decade later. So there's all of these inside, stories there. Well, she, similar to Marilyn Monroe, also kept a diary. Well, the CIA, since she was married to a CIA guy, knew that if this ever surfaced and saw the light of day, it could bring down the whole house of cards. So on October 12th of 1964, less than a year after Kennedy was assassinated, she was murdered in Georgetown, and James Jesus Angleton actually broke into her house and stole the diary, and so much for that.
Now, why do you include Malcolm X? What was the significance of Malcolm X's death?
Well, Malcolm X, he was, of course, a member of the Nation of Islam with Elijah Muhammad. And Malcolm X was in prison during the 50s and was already being monitored by the FBI even before his release. Well, he comes out, and Elijah Muhammad realizes that Malcolm X has this charisma. He's able to really coordinate things like that. And he took this rather small Nation of Islam at the time, and he's the one that built it into this much larger organization because he was able to attract people to the organization. Well, he ended up realizing that Elijah Muhammad was a complete phony, preaching one thing about abstinence and living the proper way, and then fooling around with his secretaries, impregnating his secretaries, basically the same kind of stuff Jesse Jackson does up there in Chicago. Well, they kick Malcolm X out. Malcolm X goes on this big world tour then and starts meeting with leaders from these other impoverished nations. And ultimately, they realize that Malcolm X was doing more damage, so to speak, away from the Nation of Islam than he was inside of it, because at least inside the Nation of Islam, he was somewhat contained. So ultimately, it was this coordination between the FBI, the New York Police Department, the Muslims, and the CIA, and they first firebombed Malcolm X's house and then ultimately shot him in the Audubon ballroom. And there's a lot of evidence that a very young at the time, Louis Farrakhan, was at least involved, not as one of the trigger men, but in the planning of this assassination.
As I remember, of course, one of the men, probably the only one who was ever prosecuted and convicted of being one of the gunmen, got just a couple of years for killing him. What was the background there?
Yeah, well, the two guys that actually were convicted of it, now there were you know, men that were seen running away and that were never caught. But two of the men that were arrested and jailed were sitting at home. And they had alibis and witnesses with them saying that, no, he wasn't at the Audubon Ballroom. He was at home watching TV with his family. So, you know, again, you have these flunkies that are set up to take the fall. But, you know, I go so far as to say, Stan, that of all of these events, not only covered in this book, but all of these other conspiracies, that the real culprits or criminals haven't once ever been convicted other than Jack Ruby, when he, you know, he obviously was the killer of Lee Harvey, and he was arrested and tried and imprisoned and probably murdered, you know, via injection of cancer. But all of the other ones, I asked people, I said, name one person who was the actual killer that was caught and sent to prison, and it's always the patsies and fall guys that take the blame for it.
In fact, I went down to Dallas with my wife, and we went to the museum there, and there in the museum they have a video, and it actually shows Jack Ruby, and this is a real live footage. He's talking to the members of the Warren Commission. He's saying, get me out of Dallas, move me any other place in the country, get me out of Dallas, and I'll tell you the whole story. I'll tell you what really happened and why I killed Jack Kennedy, Lee Harvey Oswald. And the members of the Warren Commission are sort of nodding at him. About 3 weeks later or 2 weeks later, why, Jack Ruby is dead of fulminant cancer, the most amazing cancer I've ever seen.
Exactly.
And this is the way the world really works, ladies and gentlemen. This is the way the world really works.
Yeah. Well, there's there's a woman named Dorothy Kilgallen. I don't know if you remember her.
Sure, she was she had reported on the assassination of Kennedy, and they had to get rid of her.
Well, she interviewed Jack Ruby right before he died, and Dorothy Kilgallen came out and said, I got bombshell material here that Ruby told me. Well, Dorothy Kilgallen went home to her apartment and never came out of it again. So, you know, she was another one that was privy to this dynamite information, and she never saw another day. So, and she was a well-known reporter. She appeared on that, what was that show, What's My Line, or one of those game shows. So she was a relatively, famous journalist that got too close to Ruby, and he was done away with.
Well, they killed an awful lot of people. In fact, a friend of mine wrote a book called The Missing Witnesses, and there were well over 100 people, like Dorothy Kilgallen and others, who knew something about the assassination, who were systematically killed in the weeks that followed the assassination of President John Kennedy. And this is all covered up. They focus our attention on some other issue. Ladies and gentlemen, they manipulate our minds. This is what they're doing with General Petraeus at the present time. They're using this to take our minds off of the really important issue. And of course, I think the most important issue is that just a week ago, they stole an election. I mean, basically, we had all sorts of precincts in both Ohio and certainly in Pennsylvania, where either 99% or 100% of the people voted for Obama. That just can't happen. But it did, and it wasn't just one, it was dozens of precincts. And, of course, this election was totally stolen. But now we have something else to focus our attention on. And certainly Mitt Romney is not going to challenge what happened. Why not? Well, he may have had an offer he couldn't refuse. Or, like Nixon, who was going to challenge the election in 1960 after the Kennedy family stole the election. And Nixon was told, don't you dare do that. We'll let you run again, and you'll get to be the president. But right now, you're not to question the results of that election, because we can't let the American people understand that elections are stolen and the election process is fraudulent in the United States. And Nixon did just exactly what he was told to do, and they got him elected in 1968 as president.
Yeah, you're so right about that, Stan. And I live here in Pennsylvania. In Philadelphia, not only are there, you know, I don't know what the exact number, but how many precincts there were that Obama got 100% of the vote. But there's also some of these precincts where they had 90,000 registered voters. Now, everybody knows that not all 100% of people vote. It's usually around 60%. But some of these precincts, 90,000 total registered voters, but Obama received 112,000 votes. You know, like 20,000 more votes than people were even registered. And there's also another story that I saw. Pat Shannon, you probably know Pat Shannon, I'm sure. You know, writes for American Free Press. He's been around forever. But he sent me a story that every single state that voters were required to show ID in before they could vote, Romney won. Every state that voters weren't required to show ID in, Obama won. So, you know, that just adds another element to this whole vote scam thing that, of course, people are voting 2, 3, 4, 10 times as far as we know. And, you know, why do you think there's so much protest against these voter ID laws?
And why, of course, can we get rid of the electronic voting machines? And actually, in Ireland, they routed up all the voter machines and they took them to the dump and they crushed them. And that's what we should do here. And we should be talking about that instead of having our attention focused on Petraeus. I really believe that's why this whole thing has come up right now, ladies and gentlemen. Understand, your reality is being manipulated. Your ideas formed by the people who control the television. And program after program after program, all we hear about is Petraeus's sexual indiscretions. Why doesn't anybody talk about the fraudulent election that has put a very dangerous man back in the White House? Well, before we go on, Victor, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get copies of your book, New World Assassins, and, of course, your other books.
Well, I appreciate it, Stan. They can go to www.wingtv.net. Wing, like in a bird, wingtv.net, and this book and about 220 or 230 other books and DVDs and CD-ROMs are available there. So a lot of material. You can take a look at it, and, you know, yeah. And I appreciate you having me come on, and I couldn't agree with you more, Stan, about Obama. I think he's an extremely, extremely dangerous man, and you know, I wasn't a cheerleader going out there rah, rah, rah for Mitt Romney, but this Obama, this is a dangerous, psychopathic man we have in the White House, and I'm not so sure that our country can endure 4 years of not only just the amateurishness of this guy who's never had a job, who's not a bright person, but just the socialism and, I believe, the hatred of America and white people that he harbors. So, you know, I just cringe thinking of what awaits us in this country.
Well, I cringe too, but I really believe that the Trilateral Commission, which really runs America in my estimation, the Trilateral Commission wanted Romney. Now, why that is, I don't know, but it certainly we have from several reliable sources, and one of the most reliable is a man named Mortimer Zuckerman, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, member of the Trilateral Commission, editor and owner of U.S. News and World Report. And if you read his essays recently, they're all vicious attacks on Obama. Why would he do that? Well, because, in my estimation, the Trilateral Commission wanted Romney. And they intended to get Romney. They probably pulled a lot of shenanigans. I'm certain they're not above fixing elections. But the other side did a better job, and they stole the election by very certainly cornering the votes in Pennsylvania and Ohio. All you needed is a couple of the major states, and you can steal the election. And that's exactly what they did. I do not believe the trilateralists are going to take this lying down. And I would tell you that certainly if I was carrying a life insurance policy for Barack Obama, I would be very, very concerned. I really don't believe that he's going to last the 4 years. I hope I'm wrong. I don't certainly want to see anybody harmed, but knowing how vicious the people on the other side are, and they're quite willing to start wars and kill a million or 5 million or 100 million people, they really don't care. There's only they started World War II, they killed 40 to 60 million people, and they actually built the weapons for Adolf Hitler and for the Nazis all during that. And anybody who questions that needs to get John Loftus's book, which we do carry, America's Nazi Secret, or my interviews with John Loftus, The War Against the Jews, there are 4 CDs. Get that and understand how we financed the Germans during the war, and 40 to 60 million people died and probably three times that many were wounded, and certainly it was because of that we had the Holocaust. And actually, the slaughter of the Christians in Germany, according to Norman Cohn in his book entitled "Warrant for Genocide," 12 million Christians were slaughtered by the Nazis. But you never heard that on 60 Minutes. Victor, we're beginning to run out of time. I'm going to be quiet. You go right ahead. What are your thoughts on Sydney about what's going on today?
Well, right now, the thing that I guess when I looked at this last election, both of these men obviously are faulted. I don't think many people in America were real enthused with either one of them. But when you look at these candidates as symbols, it couldn't have been clearer that what America is now burdened with, again, is the symbol of weakness, a symbol of a dependency culture, a symbol where instead of striving for greatness and picking oneself up by the bootstraps and going out there and working hard and trying to make something, what we have now is a philosophy and an attitude of weakness where Big Brother, the government, will take care of us. We have the food stamp president. We have the welfare president, where he's essentially saying, don't try hard, you know, just lay on the couch. We'll, you know, become reliant upon the government, and as such, we'll take care of you. And, you know, if this isn't the way a great nation becomes greater.
And, of course, the trouble is, of course, we don't have the money to do this. We're doing all of these things, as Victor says, but we're having to borrow 40 cents out of every dollar.
Exactly.
How long can you keep providing utopian benefits for the people when you have to borrow the money? And, of course, one of these days we're going to have to start paying the interest on all the money we borrowed, and heaven help us.
You already know that calcium is important. But did you know that calcium cannot be absorbed without magnesium? That's a fact. And the calcium that isn't absorbed calcifies your soft muscle tissues. Haven't you ever wondered what's really causing all your muscle aches? I'm Pat Sullivan, the founder of Jigsaw Health. I created Jigsaw Magnesium with SRT to solve my own magnesium deficiency problems. You see, magnesium helps people feel younger because magnesium keeps the soft tissues from calcifying. This helps you sleep better at night and feel more energized during the day. Call 888-352-5050 and we'll explain why Jigsaw Magnesium with sustained release technology is so much better than any drugstore magnesium supplement. Mention this radio ad and receive $5 off your order. 888-352-5050. JigsawMagnesium.com.
What has happened to the judicial system in these United States? From the Supreme Court to the smallest county seat, we've seen the judiciary make decisions which are more legislative than interpretive. The judicial system was designed to ensure that the laws of the land were just and constrained by our Constitution. Now judges have immunity and cannot be prosecuted when they act outside the law. This must stop. The judicial branch needs reform. We must pass laws which bring a renewed sense of justice to our nation's court system. I urge you to go to judicialreformnow.com. That's judicialreformnow.com. At that website, you can find out what's really going on in this area of lawlessness, and more importantly, you can find out what you can do to stem the tide of judicial malpractice. judicialreformnow.com. judicialreformnow.com.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for Prostate Support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we hope you enjoyed the interview with Victor Thorne. I think he did a very good job on this book, and certainly he brings out the spiritual aspect of what's going on, probably better than almost any other book I've read recently. And so for that reason, I was really very, very pleased with it. Under any circumstances, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there and you're in a position to help us, well, I would love to hear from you. You can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. You can buy our products. You can advertise with us. Or whatever you can do, we'd appreciate it. Because we want to maintain our network of programs, and certainly in the afternoon and the evening programs, because we have an early morning program, which, of course, is on the American Freedom Network. But the afternoon, evening programs are very expensive to maintain. And if you can help us, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We hope you'll get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. We hope that you'll listen to our talk on Agenda 21, the covert plan. There's a syllabus that goes with that that we certainly recommend. Why? Because, of course, it's their documents. Their documents. And certainly you can read the Earth Charter. You can certainly get the pictures and read the inscriptions on the Georgia Guidestones, which are erected by one of the secret societies that runs the world today. It is not one secret society. There are a number of them, but they're all interlocked in a common desire to bring about a one-world government with a one-world leader and, of course, the destruction of Christianity, because that's a common denominator behind everything going on today. They hate Christianity, which is why, of course, they took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools, and why we have allowed these things to happen, because our church has been infiltrated. They've infiltrated every aspect of our life. They have the people in the military. They control the six major banks here in the United States. Of course, that's Chase Manhattan, Morgan Stanley, Citigroup, Bank of America, Wells Fargo. And basically, they largely control 70% of all the financial assets in our country. And of course, the Federal Reserve System today is buying $40 billion worth of mortgage bonds from those six major banks at this very, very time. Now, the sixth bank was Citigroup, of course. So you need to get this information. You need to understand they control our educational system, our universities. They've infiltrated, certainly, our religious organizations. They have their people planted in our seminaries. They've changed the music and the message of the Christian church. Understand that. And they've changed the very nature of God, or at least our perception of God, so that God would never bring vengeance on a nation. God would never punish a nation that had turned against him. We all live under grace. We have nothing to worry about. And ladies and gentlemen, we have a great deal to worry about, because God is bringing his vengeance on America right at the present time. And I think one of the best examples of that is the election of Barack Hussein Obama to the presidency. And within a few hours of his presidency, he was putting out all sorts of executive orders which have had the force of law, which are intent upon bringing a dictatorship to what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. And how many Americans are willing to get involved? How many Americans are going to be willing to forego the good times and invest their time and effort in trying to preserve our freedom? Well, if there are enough people, we may be able to save America. We're going to have a great revival to do it, because, of course, without God's help, there's no way we can turn this around. This is not a political battle. This is not a cultural ideological battle. This is a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural, and financial, and certainly educational battlefield. But it is a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. You can listen to us there on the internet, iPad, iPhone, the Apple TV. Certainly a lot of people listen on cell phone.
While the storm clouds gather, far off maybe I was thinking back with America before. I don't know. And he replays it.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's got to be reality and not illusion or delusion that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Judith Baker, who, of course, had known Lee Harvey Oswald back in 1963. And this is the story of her relationship with certainly Lee Harvey Oswald, the man who has been accused of killing President Kennedy, and he did not. He's been accused of being pro-communist. Actually, he was a government agent who was sent to Russia as a spy. He was working certainly for our government agencies. When he went to Russia, he certainly has been said to have been a supporter of Fidel Castro. He wasn't. He was part of a movement trying to assassinate Fidel Castro, but most of what you think you know just is not true. But Judith has written a wonderful book called Me and Lee. Me and Lee, the story of Lee Harvey Oswald. Judith, thank you very much for being with us again this evening.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
And basically, I want to point out that Judith is going to be in the Santa Cruz area on the Saturday after Thanksgiving. That is, of course, November 24th. On Saturday afternoon, she's going to be at the Grange Hall on 17th Avenue, 1900. 17th Avenue, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, or 3:30 in the afternoon. Of course, she's on a book tour talking about her book, Me and Lee. And it's a fascinating book. I've read it, and I really enjoyed it. In fact, I'll have to admit, I started out skeptical, but Judith convinced me. Of course, she's convinced a lot of people a lot smarter than I am, who know a lot more about this, people like Ed Haslam, who wrote Dr. Mary, Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, and then what was the last title when he rewrote that book?
It was Dr. Mary's Monkey, after he found out about me, and he actually went through, and he was pretty rough on me, and now he's my a great advocate, and I am, of course, I'm very grateful for the careful and assiduous research that Edward Haslam has put into the book Dr. Mary's Monkey.
And basically, of course, I've read the book when it had a previous title, but it's the same book, basically. It's about David Perry and Dr. Mary and their effort, of course, to create a monkey cancer virus. And basically, this was the work that was going on in New Orleans, certainly, and of course, when Jim Garrison, of course, brought a trial, brought certain people to trial there in New Orleans concerning the assassination of American president. One of the people, of course, who would have been involved was David Perry, but didn't he commit suicide or perhaps was murdered before that trial? Whatever happened to David?
Well, I knew David pretty well, and I knew, of course, that he felt badly about the fact that he was a homosexual. He tried very hard to, he said he just didn't know what he was going to do about it. The idea that he may have committed suicide comes from the fact that a suicide note was found in his typewriter. But if I have time to go into this, would I have time to go into this a little bit or not?
Sure you will. We'll do that in just a moment here when we get
okay.
to another section of the program. But ladies and gentlemen, this is a fascinating book. And I've studied, of course, the murder of certainly Jack Kennedy for a long time. And certainly there's no question at all that this was certainly not the work of a lone gunman, because, of course, there were a lot more shots that were fired, and Lee Harvey Oswald was not the murderer. In fact, he knew that there was going to be an attempt to murder Kennedy. He was actually had gotten into this inner core of the conspiracy to murder Kennedy because he wanted to try to stop it. He was working with other people who were trying to do the same. There really are groups, or at least there were groups out there trying to do that many years ago. But we're going to get back and tell you much more on this in just a moment as we interview Judith Baker in her book, Me and Lee. Judith, you go right ahead with the story of David Ferry.
Okay. Well, first of all, David Ferry was adamantly anti-communist, and he was anti-Castro, and he was a very intelligent man. And they've tried these days to try and say he wasn't that smart, but if you know seven languages, you're pretty smart. And David was a very complex individual, and he didn't like women very much. Sometimes he did have a girlfriend once, I know, because, well, he told me so. And he told me he could put up with me because I was smart enough. But what was interesting to me is that they are trying to say that David Ferry may have committed suicide. There was a note, a typewritten note, unsigned, left in his typewriter. There was another note they found that had been written before. That note really, this thing about when you read this, I will be quite dead, and other things that are in there, and that he offered this man love, and this man, you know, had gone off and was falling in love with a woman he would marry, that kind of thing. David Ferry would not have committed suicide over anybody because he had so many relationships with so many people. That was just one of many, even though he, it was L, I think, that got the letter, Bulboff. Now, here's what's interesting. That letter, we don't know who it was really written by because it was typed and it wasn't signed. We do know that the last person to see him alive, his name was George Lardner, and he was a reporter, and he reported that when he saw him at 4 o'clock in the morning, Dave Ferry was just fine, good spirits and all that. So why does he sit down? Because the coroner said he died right away after George Lardner saw him. So how come we have all of a sudden he's writing a suicide note, and then he apparently commits suicide? Well, here's something very interesting. He had an enlarged thyroid, I think it was weighed 35 grams, had nodules on it. It was heavier than it should have been, and that means something bad was going on inside of him. Of course, he had bug eyes, so you have to, and he had hypertension. It was right there that he had hypertension. And I'm going to say some technical things if you're medically trained, but I hope it makes sense. His lungs had edema in it. That is, he had fluid in his lungs. Now, you can get fluid in your lungs if you get too much of a hormone called Prolyd, which is a thyroid hormone. If you get too much, you're going to get what's called a thyroid storm. You're going to get fluid in your lungs. Your heart will beat so hard, and here he had high blood pressure. He should never have had any Prolyd. Yet there was a bottle of Prolyd found that had 97 of the 100 pills were missing.
It already sounds like it was hyperthyroid.
Hyperthyroid, and yet why in the world is he Prolyd?
Hold that thought.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Judith was just talking about David Ferry. Now, basically, if you study the history of what happened in New Orleans at the time, and just preceding the assassination of President Kennedy, there was a center there where they were plotting the murder of an American president. And David Ferry was certainly on the periphery of this, Judith at the time. And basically, of course, Judith was in contact with Lee Harvey Oswald that met and that spent time together, and they were very, very close. And basically, of course, Lee was estranged or somewhat estranged from his wife, Marina.
Yes.
Oswald, I think was she in Dallas?
She was living in Irving, Texas, which was very close to Dallas.
All right. And so basically, of course, Lee was lonely, and certainly Judith was lonely. Well, of course, she was supposed to get married to a gentleman, but she really didn't.
Yeah, I did, but he left the day after we married, and that's the last I saw of him, mostly for the summer. He'd just pop in once in a while.
Right.
It broke my heart, really.
Well, now, basically, did you get back with Robert after Lee died?
Well, yeah, I had to, but I wanted to finish about David Ferry. David Ferry, basically what I'm trying to get across is that apparently because there was fluid in his stomach and they said the white particles of vegetable matter, they never analyzed the contents of his stomach. They never blood test. They never tried to see if he had been poisoned or anything else. Instead, they looked at the brain and he had a hemorrhage. If you have very high blood pressure, you bet you can get a hemorrhage, but he also had small hemorrhages as well. And So people were trying to say, oh, you know, he had lots of bleeds. But he was a pilot. Pilots will get minor little bleeds in their brain. So those kind of things happen. I'm just trying to say that I'm very skeptical about the fact that David Ferry was going to be called in by Jim Garrison to find out what really went on in New Orleans. He knew something was up because we have Dr. Ochsner, who was involved in this, complaining that he was afraid he was going to be arrested and indicted by Garrison.
People who don't know, Dr. Ochsner was a very prominent physician in New Orleans, but he was part and parcel of this whole effort.
Yes, he was. He was very closely
with the CIA at the time. It's a fascinating story, and all of these things interlock. Right?
It's complicated, and people say, well, you know, tell us the story easily. Well, the whole assassination scenarios, they're so complex, and this is why the problem hasn't been solved. But I can tell you that Dr. Ochsner is a player because he knew, I don't mean that he himself concocted the assassination plan, but he knew enough people, and Lee being working on this project with me, and I was involved with Dr. Ochsner and with Dr. Mary Sherman, Lee was able to find out from David Ferry, who was also involved. David Ferry pretended that he hated the print. What happened is he wanted to see the president get shot because of the Bay of Pigs fiasco and so on. He's very anti-communist. Later he found, and he told me personally, you know, I have to pretend I'm anti-Kennedy now, even though I changed my mind. That's what he told me.
I think it's important for people to understand what happened. First of all, Jack Kennedy did not win the election in 1960. He lost it, but of course his dad had worked out an arrangement with the mafia. In Chicago, they stole the electoral votes for Illinois and one other state. And so Nixon was told, do not challenge the election. We'll let you get elected later on. But we don't want the American people to understand that elections are fraudulent. And so basically in this instance, Nixon sat back, and of course Jack Kennedy became president. He wasn't supposed to, but he did. And he was an independent thinker. He certainly wanted to.
Independently rich, he didn't owe anybody. And of course, even though his father had rigged the election and everything, he started going after the mafia. And you can imagine how angry. You see, this was probably our last president who really acted as a real president.
And, of course, basically he wanted, of course, to break the back of the Federal Reserve System. So he started printing silver-backed certificates. We don't have money who has anything back behind it. But Jack Kennedy started to print silver-backed certificates. He didn't want to get involved in a war in Vietnam, because they wanted a war in Vietnam. It would be a great diversion so they could bring in the Great Society. And basically, Jack Kennedy certainly believed
a lot. And so many of these things. You know, also, he was the one that had Martin Luther King right in the Oval Office. You put all of these together, and you have a lot of different people hating Jack Kennedy and willing to cooperate together and make sure it gets covered up. And what do you have next? Lee finds out because David Ferry was on the periphery of this. He had expressed hatred and anger against Kennedy, but this is a fellow Catholic, and later he changed his mind when he learned more about these very things and decided to secretly back Kennedy, but he's going to go and keep talking like he hates Kennedy, and he began to be invited in because this is a crack pilot. He was a fantastic pilot, and he was bold and brave, and he was considered someone they could trust. And he passed Lee Oswald, and then he started praising Lee Oswald as someone who would be good to be added to the assassination ring. This was on purpose. Lee said in there.
All right, but basically this is David Ferry you're talking about.
David Ferry introduced Lee Oswald to people who hated Kennedy and who were part, the ring, it all started really in New Orleans, and that's why Jim Garrison started the investigation there with Clay Shaw and everything else.
And basically,
it began in New Orleans.
It involved the oil men. They didn't want to lose the oil depletion allowance.
Well, that's right, and here we have Dr. Ochsner knows all about Kennedy, and he was actually in charge of Kennedy's visit in 1962 to New Orleans. Why in the world a doctor would be involved? You know, here he's the one in charge of the visit, he learns all kinds of details, and all his best friends are located in Dallas, Texas. These are Texas oilmen. They're taking him out to Coon Creek Club and to their ranches. They're giving him millions of dollars. He gets a Cadillac every year from Murchison. So you have all of this going on, and these are the rich oilmen. Then you have Ochsner is also friends with the CIA. His best friend, when he and Wild Bill Donovan on the board of directors of the American Society, and he becomes president of the American Cancer Society. That's Ochsner did. But here's his friend Donovan. Wild Bill Donovan goes on to suggest that they form the CIA, and Ochsner is right in there, flying to Washington every single week, reporting, and he goes all around the world looking at the medical facilities. He becomes close, very close, to everybody who hates Kennedy. And he could be skinny, flying back and forth all the time between New Orleans and Dallas and all those people in there.
But because there were people at the highest echelons of government that hated Kennedy. One of them, of course, was Richard Nixon. One of them was J. Edgar Hoover. Because Hoover would have had...
Oh, yeah, Hoover did not want to be forced to retire, and the Kennedy brothers couldn't wait to retire him. Here's, as you know, when Lee Oswald was arrested, it was only a few hours after he was arrested that the FBI office in Dallas contacted John Edgar Hoover and said, we have found some other people that might be involved in the assassination. What should we do? And he says, no, we have found our man. This is just 4 hours after Lee Oswald has been arrested. He was arrested only no time at all after the assassination. They put out a report, an arrest report at 1:40. I mean, Kennedy was shot at 12:31. At 1:40, okay, just 69 minutes later, here you have Lee Oswald is arrested, and they put out an arrest sheet. On the arrest sheet filled out at that time, it says that this man killed President John F. Kennedy, killed and shot him, also wounded Governor John Connally, and also shot and killed Officer J.T. Tippit. Now, J.D. Tippit, now, how in the world could they come to this conclusion when they hadn't even interrogated Lee Oswald? They hadn't even searched him yet. They hadn't done any of those things yet. They're already saying he is the killer.
Why did he go into the theater? Do you have any idea?
Yes, I do. I have a clue because when he was in the USSR, he told me when he was in Minsk, he would attend often this play called The Peak Dom, The Queen of Spades. And this is a film that was going on. He would meet people there, and they would take messages under the seats that he took. That's one of the reasons Lee could not cry out and say, look, I'm from the ONI, and they loaned me the CIA. I wouldn't have killed Kennedy. I was there to protect him. He couldn't say things like that, and they knew he wouldn't. They knew he'd be faithful because all his contacts in the USSR that he had made, they would have executed them. This is the height of the Cold War. They would have tortured them and executed, you know, people overseas in the USSR that were working for our government.
Right. And basically, of course, Lee Harvey Oswald was working for our government when he went to the Soviet Union.
Yes.
He went there as a spy, but of course, he was supposed to be somebody disillusioned with America, renounced his citizenship, wanted to live in the Soviet Union, and the
yeah.
Soviets never really trusted him. And the one reason, of course, I learned from the book, he married Marina because, of course, he wanted, of course, to have a wife there. That would give him a reason.
More legitimacy, yes.
Right, and of course, Marina married.
So imagine, see, he's at the Texas Theater.
Right.
And he's moving from seat to seat. That's on record. Why? He starts upstairs. He goes and buys popcorn. He moves downstairs. Who knows what he did upstairs in the balcony. Now he's moving from seat to seat. He's sitting beside people one after another. He is trying to find his contact. The last person he sits beside is a pregnant woman. She moves away, and then they move in and arrest him. They knew he was going to be there.
All right, fine. But basically, of course, you point you make in your book is that actually Lee Harvey Oswald had told you that he was working with a group that were going to try to kill the
yes,
president.
He did.
And he was working with them because he wanted to save the president.
Yes, and he
and
asked,
he really
felt
that he might.
I can't wait to tell you about what he did for the president in Chicago.
And basically, of course, he was trying to save the president, And this is why he'd gone into this book. But he felt and he feared that he was going to be set up as a patsy. Is that right?
That's exactly right.
And hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Judith, you go right ahead.
Yes, you see, Lee Oswald knew he was being set up as a patsy, and this is very hard for people to believe, that why was he there? Why didn't he leave? Or why didn't he tell the authorities? Well, he did tell the authorities 3 weeks earlier. He learned that there was going to be, he told me himself personally, he told me on Wednesday, this was about 37 and a half hours before the assassination is when we see speaking. And, I mean, I was so worried about him, and he was telling me what was going on because he knew that if he died, you know, he'd never be able to explain to his children what happened. And he loved his baby so much. So he wanted somebody to know, and he trusted me, and I loved him, and he knew it, and I loved him to the death. And, that's, I mean, he was the same for me. And we here's what happened. He said that, you know, when I didn't come back from the USSR in a coffin, they didn't never trusted me again, and they wouldn't let me advance, and he did all kinds of things to obey them so he could advance in the company. They didn't put him in college like they said they would, and all kinds of things. They wouldn't let him advance and because they didn't trust him. And then when he got information that, about an impending plot in Chicago, and I told people that Lee had told me he had tried to save and felt he was successful in saving the president prior to Dallas and the events that happened there, that he would try again to do what he could with an abort team to try to save the president. Here he had, now we know that was 1999. Everybody thought, oh my gosh, you know, how can you, we believe that maybe he was innocent or he was a patsy, but how can you say he actually moved to try to save the president? I mean, come on, but it was true. And now in 2007, Abraham Bolden with James Douglas, you know, the wonderful book, JFK and the Unspeakable, comes out. And there it is that an informant named Lee contacted the FBI in Chicago, and they arrested armed men there. And after that, Kennedy called off that. I mean, there was an attempt on Kennedy's life. Kennedy lives 3 more weeks. He's able to get the directive to return troops home from Vietnam, which proves, of course, that his heart was set on not having the Vietnam War. He was able to make his famous speeches that in the end that are so important about secret societies and so on. There are so many things. I mean, I don't know how all that occurred, but I know that Lee worked very hard to try and save the president, and he told me so. And he said he was going to stick it out in Dallas. He realized that he was in danger. Actually, he realized that way back in July when he realized that they weren't trusting him, and yet he was being given information and encouraged to investigate a ring that they felt that was interested in killing Castro, but also this ring was expressing information that told the FBI and I don't know what other informants that they had interest in killing Kennedy if they could not kill Castro. And this was a killing machine that was used, you know, all throughout South America and Central America. Lots of things were happening. Lee did penetrate that group with the help of David Ferry, and then it reformed itself or got stronger in Dallas. And Lee knew what he was getting into, and I said, you know, you're too young. I don't want you to die. And I said, think of an oak tree. You know, the Bible says we're supposed to live as long as a tree. And he said, well, maybe I'll only live as long as a lily, but that's beautiful too. And he could be quite poetic.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Judith was very close to Lee, and Lee eventually told her he knew there was a plot to kill Kennedy, and he was going to try to abort it. It actually saved Kennedy's life. There had been an assassination attempt in Chicago 3 weeks earlier, which it aborted, and he was going to try to abort the effort to kill Kennedy in Dallas. But, of course, he was working very closely with this group, and, of course, they set him up. As the patsy. In fact, didn't they get him the job at the Texas Book Dispensary?
Well, the Texas School Book Depository was actually owned by an oil man. His name was Mr. Byrd, B-Y-R-D, who was great friends with Lyndon Johnson, so you have a connection there that's kind of suspicious. They were the man who actually, how he got his job there is through Ruth Payne, who said she got it from a neighbor. But Ruth Payne did not tell Lee Oswald about a better job that he could have gotten with more pay. She only told him about this one. I don't want to go into what I think about Ruth Payne. Let's don't go there. But I will say this, that Lee Oswald realized that eventually, because of his contacts and everything, he told me that there were three locations. And by the way, others have finally come out with the same thing because more evidence has been released. But basically, an attempt might be made at Love Field. It might be made at Dealey Plaza. It might be made at Trademark, because those are the three places. And they had decided, Lee told me, not to even think about using Love Field because there wasn't enough cover. They couldn't get away from there. They might be caught. Snipers, you know. And anyway, what's ironic is that all along, Lee believed that if he left by then, that they would have hunted him down anyway and killed him, and they would have killed all of us. And it's kind of horrible. We know about, what's his name, Harrelson? Charles Harrelson, I believe, is his name. And who's the, just a moment, please. I'm thinking the one who got his parents were killed. All right. There's one of these people who was deeply involved in some of the murderous attempts against Kennedy and so on. He may have had second thoughts. What we do know is that his family, his mother and father, were found chopped up in a freezer, okay, in their own home. And there on the floor were all kinds of instruments and things that belonged to him. And Lee believed that even if he left, they would pin murders on him the same way.
See? Well, weren't you told by David Ferry that you had to, of course, drop out of a site and that you dare
yes.
not talk? If you did, they would kill you?
Well, of course. And of course, Lee told me he wanted me to live and did not give up hope, you know, that he loved me forever. And, you know, he put his ring off and left it behind with his wife, Marina. He said goodbye to his wife and children the night before. He knew exactly what was going to happen. There is so much that I could say about the evidence that framed Lee Oswald. They talk about how he objected to the fact that he didn't have a shirt on when he was with teenagers in lineup, for example, and they were all wearing shirts and he didn't have one. But the lineup is very important, I think, for people to hear about, because I think we have enough time. In the first two lineups, he had to appear with three men who were office workers, well dressed. Mind you, one had a jacket.
I'm sorry.
On.
Now, what is this lineup you're talking about?
The lineups are so that witnesses could say, try and pick out for the police which one they thought they saw, that they like on a bus, or they saw him here or there, to try and implicate him for the murder of Kennedy. And for example, or of J.D. Tippit, because people saw somebody running away from the murder. And so they wanted them to identify Lee Oswald as the murderer. So they have him in a lineup here for people to see if they can recognize him. So what they do is they get three office workers from the Dallas Police Department, and they have Lee. Now, Lee is all beat up. He's got a ripped shirt on, and yet you have one guy, he's in a red red vest. Another one's wearing a nice jacket, and the third one's wearing a nice office shirt and all that. And here's the hard part. Michael T. Griffith and others have, and Gilles Zeus have looked up the records, and it's pretty obvious. I've got to tell you, I'll tell you as soon as the break is over, what we found out about how they set up Lee Oswald to take the blame in the lineup.
Well, you're suggesting that the Dallas police were in on this. We know
the police had to be in on this.
We know the FBI was in on it. We know the CIA was in on it.
Well, the police could easily be in on it, you see, because we have the mayor of Dallas at that time. His name was Earl Cabell. His brother had been fired by Kennedy. That was General Cabell of the CIA. And here, Earl, run the police.
Hold that thought. Hold the thought. Hold the thought. We'll be right back with Judith Baker here at Radio Liberty.
While a storm cloud gathers far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer.
All right, Judith, you go right ahead. You were telling us about General Cowell.
Yes, he was fired by President Kennedy because of his actions at the Bay of Pigs. He had basically disobeyed his president. And, of course, in Me and Lee, and also the book JFK and the Unspeakable, you can find out the connections here. Here you have the mayor of Dallas. His brother has been disgraced and his whole career ruined. But Cabell is just, you know, he also used to run the police, the Dallas police. And there is so much evidence, and I have it on... If you go to judithbakerblogspot.com, I have over 55 entries there where you can see how Lee Oswald was framed. And the one I wanted to talk about, just one of many that people may not have known, we have pretty good evidence that they had the people stand forth and give their name and where they worked, see? So you have the first guy. You have three men, they work for the police department. Each one stands forth and says, my name is so-and-so, and I work for the Dallas Police Department. The other one stands up and says, my name is so-and-so, and I'm a clerk in the police department. And the third one gets up and he says, I'm so-and-so, and I work in the police department. And then Lee Oswald has to stand forth. He says, I'm Lee Harvey Oswald. His name is in all the newspapers, by the way, by now. And I worked at the Texas School Book Depository, which also was in all the papers. And then they ask these people, which one do you think killed the president? You know, which one do you think shot Tippit? So this is the kind of thing. They did that at least twice, you know, and with these office workers and so on. And the Warren Commission is on record saying we are satisfied that the lineups were fair. It's right there in the Warren Commission report. It's absurd. All right, so Lee, though, his... They said, how can he be so calm? How can he have such self-control? The things they did to him that I found out were just sickening when he was in custody. One of the first things that happened to him is they slammed his head real hard against the door when they put him in the police car. That's why he has that big cut on his head.
Hold that thought, Judith. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Judith Baker. We're going to be talking about her book, Me and Lee. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, Judith Baker. Her book is Me and Lee. And Judith, how could people get copies of your excellent book?
Why, thank you very much. If they go, it's easy to get it from meandlee.com if they're on the Internet. Or they can go to a Barnes & Noble store and ask for it. They could also go to amazon.com, but the fastest way, I think, to get it would be through meandlee.com. And this book is by Trine Day. And also, they should think about Dr. Mary's Monkey. It's another wonderful book. And it's a companion volume in a way. It explains why we had this secret research going on in New Orleans, how we were trying to kill Castro. And that investigator spent a couple of decades trying to get all the information. Unfortunately, he ran into someone who was posing as me, and that pulled him off track for a while.
Now you're talking about Ed Haslam, the writer. And because basically, Ed writes the foreword to this book.
Yes, and Jim Mars writes the afterword, because Jim, when he first interviewed me, and we were sitting there, and he was looking at all my evidence and saying, wow, this is good. But then he said what really caught his attention is when I told him there was an abort team, because back in late 1999, that information had not got out. Tosh Plumlee is a CIA pilot who has come forth who said he was on the abort team. And
no,
Jim
no,
Mars
wait,
had just
what,
interviewed
what,
him.
Judith, what is the abort team?
The abort team was a group of people like from the CIA and all that didn't want Kennedy killed. They thought it was treasonous, of course. They were trying to stop it. they had to be very quiet and careful because, of course, you know, some people were involved and they probably didn't know who was and who wasn't. But this group had at least learned about what happened in Chicago, and they also tried to protect Kennedy in Miami. In Miami, Kennedy came in by helicopter. He didn't have a motorcade. And there was a plot there that we know was also, you know, stopped from happening. And probably the abort team may have helped to get information there. Anyway, they tried to make it all the way to Dallas, but there was bad weather and other things happened. And Tumley's on record. I have a film of him saying, "We just couldn't get there in time. Everything went wrong." So Lee was on his own, and they captured him. They got him. It's just awful.
All right, basically, of course, Lee had actually told you that he feared that he was going to be killed as a result of the assassination.
Yeah, he thought he would be found dead, shot dead at the same time as Kennedy, and they'd have a rifle or something planted on him. But he was going to stick it out anyway. He said, "I know about this, and I mean, I'm suspecting this the way they're treating me." You know, he said, "That's something at least. I'm forewarned." He always had tried to keep an upbeat thing. If you had actually met Lee Oswald, like there's Francis Martello in New Orleans when Lee was arrested for handing out pro-Castro flyers. And that was one of the things he did, is pretended to be pro-Castro so that the bad side would trust him, you know. He was infiltrating the spies network that Castro had in New Orleans. And that's why he's on film and everything. They were filming him as he handed out flyers and leaflets, not because he was important himself, but because they wanted to see, this is Bannister and others, Guy Bannister formerly with the FBI, was running anti-Castro things in New Orleans, and they were filming Lee. They also got him filmed on a local TV station, but they were filming him as he's handing out pamphlets and flyers to see who took them and who kept them, because those people were interesting to them. They could be sympathetic to Castro, and if any of them actually looked at that and then called up and said, "I want to be a member of this pro-Castro group, the FPCC," then they had, you know, they'd look them up, because this group never met, they never had a meeting, they never had any lectures, but somehow all the members, there were no members either, and of course that wouldn't have happened. We think they were all rounded up. And the way they would deport them is kind of interesting. Lee told me that they can't just deport them as that they're a spy. They had to make sure they wouldn't come back. So what they did, in at least a few cases, they planted drugs on them, and then they had them arrested for drugs and deported them back, you know, in disgrace to Cuba. And that way they wouldn't come back. And that way they got their pictures taken and everything.
Well, basically, of course, Lee Harvey Oswald was actually on a radio program there.
Yes.
Representing supposedly his pro-communist views. Have you ever heard that radio program?
Oh, he asked me to hear it because, you know, I missed a five-minute program that he had, and I was kind of embarrassed. I didn't mean to miss it, but I did. And he said, "Well, I want to make sure you're going to have to prove to me that you hear this one, all of it." And so, at any rate, in the program, when he said, instead of saying New Orleans, and he had to correct me because I used to say New Orleans, and he'd say, "No, Judy, it's New Orleans. It's New Orleans. It's, or Nolens, he'd even say. It's not New Orleans." And so what does he do? But you know, on the program, he pronounces it New Orleans. So then later he said, "Did you hear it?" I said, "Yes, New Orleans." And he laughed and everything like that. But can you believe that some people then said he wasn't a native of New Orleans because he said New Orleans on the radio?
Well, basically, of course, he was pretending, though, to be pro-communist on that program.
Of course he was. He said, "I'm a Marxist." And he said he's not a Marxist-Leninist. And they said, "What's the difference?" Oh, there's a big difference, but I don't want to go into that. Lee Oswald also has been accused, and he told me about this, when he was just a young teenager in New York, he met someone, a customs officer, and he got inspired by watching Herbert Philbrick of I Led Three Lives. It was a TV program where this man becomes a communist and joins a communist cell in New York City, and he's actually with the FBI, and he tells the FBI, that was Lee's hero. How can you have a man who's posing as a communist? He's really working for the FBI, be the hero of the man who kills Kennedy, they say. How can you have the man who admires the Marines so much that when he's 16, he tries to enter the Marines, and they won't let him in until he's 17. So there in the biography, you'll see it says that he dropped out of high school, and later further down that in Wikipedia, it's awful, they put stuff in between, so you can't tell that he dropped out of school in order to join the Marines as soon as he turned 17.
Well, no, basically, of course...
This is a man who loved his country.
Well, basically, though, was he recruited into some sort of an intelligence agency when he was in the Marine Corps?
Yes, indeed, he was. And he was.
Let's just cover that. I think that's so vitally important. My impression has always been that we
have some new information on that. Lee told me about how he was trained. We have a hint of that when he was interrogated by the police. He said, I'm used to hard interrogation. I'm used to soft interrogation. And indeed, he had been trained how to withstand interrogation by the CIA. He was trained, I think, by the Office of Naval Intelligence, and said he told me he was loaned to the CIA, but he had learned tradecraft. He'd learned many things. He was supposed to enter the Soviet Union and give them relay information so they could shoot down the U-2. And the reason he was supposed to do that is Eisenhower had, some strokes, and some people didn't want them to have hold the summit. Now, they had the U-2 fly against President Eisenhower's orders right across into Soviet territory on May Day. That's like if you had somebody from Iran, I suppose, flying across America on the 4th of July, how you'd feel about it. And, of course, they felt like that was a hostile thing, and they shot this down. They could not shoot these U-2s down before. Lee Oswald comes in, and Gary Powers is on record saying that Lee Oswald was sitting there in Moscow at his trial. And, you know, he doesn't know why he was there. Lee is posing, of course, as a spy for the USSR there, you know, and that's what he was doing. So he was doing some complicated and dangerous work. But anyway, what Lee did tell me is that indeed he gave information to the Soviets because of the U-2. He didn't say it was to shoot it down, but he said because of the U-2. And that he had talked to Gary Powers, who the pilot who had been shot down. I never asked him if he talked to him on phone or in person. But later I learned from Gary Powers Jr. that Lee was at the trial there. So Lee is doing some heavy work. They move him then to Minsk, and he's working in a radio factory there. And we know that he, of course, made diagrams of the factory and so on. But Lee Oswald was there to get information. He comes back. He had actually told his own embassy. He lays down his passport, says he wants to give up his citizenship, says he wants to enter the USSR, says he is going to give all the codes that he had learned as a radar operator at Atsugi, Japan, going to give him to the Soviets. And they let him go. They let him walk out of the embassy. They don't arrest him. This is a Cold War. They let him leave. They let him go. They have to change all the codes. That's on record. Delgado, his superior officer, said they had to change all the codes and everything because he had given them the codes to show when a plane was in trouble, when a plane was descending, ascending, where it was going, everything. They had to shift everything around. Yet Lee Oswald, almost 3 years later, goes back to the embassy, picks up his passport, gets money from the U.S. government funding there, okay, and comes home with a Soviet wife in tow and child and enters the United States, and they denied that they debriefed him. We do know that they did such a thing. They did debrief him, but they kept that secret. They didn't arrest Lee Oswald. Can you imagine if today somebody went over to our American embassy in Iraq and said, I'm going to go to Iran, and I have all this information, you know, about what you're going to do to Iran, and I'm going to tell them. Do you think they'd let them walk out of the embassy and just go on over to Iran and then come back a few years later and say, I want my passport back and I'm going home and not do anything about it? This is Lee Harvey Oswald. He is a government agent working for our country, and he knew too much. and they got rid of him.
And but basically, of course, they actually paid his way to come home with his Soviet wife. And so our government sent him over there. Our government brought him home. And the average American really believes, of course, that Lee Harvey Oswald was a communist. Of course, nothing could be further from the truth.
Well, they've got the cover-up who really killed Kennedy. And they took a man they knew who would not betray the others. He would not say, look, I've been working for the CIA. All he could say is that he was a patsy. He would not betray. They took advantage of this man. They got rid of him. They knew how to get rid of him. They knew that nobody could come forward and defend him because it would expose the people who had been trying to save Kennedy. It would expose the others. He was trapped.
Well, Judith,
such a brave man, and I loved him. He was, by the way, he's nothing like he's pictured. I want people to come to this presentation on Saturday, November 24th at Santa Cruz, Live Oak Green. I'm going to show you stuff about how they framed Lee Oswald and tell you more personal things about Lee. And that starts at 3:30, you know, on Saturday.
Okay, fine. Now, basically, of course, a couple of other things I really wanted to get into. Basically, where are you? You live in Europe today because you don't dare live in the United States, is
well,
that correct?
Well, after I spoke in 1999, I thought most of these people would be dead and everything. It turned out, as you know, some of them are very much alive, even though a couple of them are in wheelchairs. They're still powerful. And these people brought in people like themselves to take over the country. Yes, take over the country. And people need to know this, that we had a coup d'etat that occurred, and they brought in people that were willing to cooperate with them. These people knew that Kennedy would be killed. They let it happen. I'm not saying that Lyndon Johnson, for example, participated in the plot. But when he came out and talked to Madeleine Brown at that party, you know, on the night before, and says, after tonight, you know, those damn Kennedys are not going to embarrass me anymore. That's not a threat, that's a promise.
And incidentally, exactly. for our listeners, we have an interview with Madeleine Duncan Brown where she tells that story that's in our, certainly our...
And they have tried to discredit her in so many ways. They will do this. How is it that all the witnesses that say Lee Oswald, you know, was an innocent man, and that other people thought, how come they're all supposed to be liars and they're all bad? But every Tom, Dick, and Harry that they can find that says anything against Lee Oswald, and often you find out later they're a pawn of one of the government agencies or of a banker organization or of a secret organization, all of them, they're all just fine. There's not one bad, you know, egg among them all.
Well, Judith, you are not living in the United States.
I'm not, and because in 1999 when I spoke out and I thought it'd be okay, the first thing that happened to me right away is my house got burglarized. The second thing is my dog was shot. Her head was shot off. And the third thing, I finally found my witnesses. I could not believe it when a lady named Deborah Conway said, I'll film your witness for you and then I'll fix the film up for you and deliver it to your hands. And then she kept it. She wouldn't let 60 Minutes have it. Wouldn't let, the History Channel documentary team get it so they could have a witness with me. So she filmed these witnesses and then kept the film. And that was, and then I found out this was because a book was coming out and she had been involved with the book with another researcher and it ruined their book. So they decided they were going to ruin me. And that's petty. So that wasn't so bad. But then a little bit later when I moved to Dallas to try and get more evidence, and find more witnesses, and I did. When I did that, I began to get hurt and threatened and everything else. And finally, I couldn't get a job. I was hospitalized a total altogether 7 times, 5 times directly the result of being in car crashes. And these, one of them, they even called me in the morning at 5:30 in the morning, said, do you want to have another accident? And I just put my book out there, I emailed my publisher that it was going to be a publisher. I said to his agent and said, don't give this book to any publisher because he was about to do that. Just stop. And friends wrote and said, look, you know, it's 6:00 in the morning. Go on to work. You know, this is somebody trying to scare you. But sure enough, that night I was in yet another so-called accident where a black van pushed another car against me. And this van had been following me for about 4 or 5 miles all through Dallas streets and everything. it had been raining really hard. If I had been going under that underpass, that cement underpass, if there hadn't been all that water there, a wall of water ran up, just sprayed up between me and the concrete there, or I would have been killed. Anyway, I went to the hospital again. And then I moved to Dallas. They filmed me there in Dallas for the History Channel. Right after, before and after I was filmed, both times that was an accident. And they found it was a cut brake line, you know, when it went to the hospital two more times. And I could go on. I finally had to move overseas because they stole my things.
And basically, you're living overseas at the present time. You're just back
it's
here.
It's been fine. No problem overseas. How can it be that I have 5 years of peace overseas?
Well, basically, of course, our guest this evening is Judith Baker. Her book, Me and Lee. Of course, the book now is published by a friend of ours, certainly Chris Milligan of Try and Dave. And how can people get the book again?
Just go to meandlee.com.
Meandlee.com.
Yes.
We'll be back in a moment here. Well, Judith, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program, so you go right ahead.
Well, I'll certainly try. What I want to really convey is the fact that there are two ways to kill people. You can do it physically, and if that doesn't work, now they are saying, well, okay, so she knew Lee Oswald, because I've got evidence, and I have witnesses on film, on audio tape, that we were lovers and all that. But you will hear them saying, I have no evidence. It's just absurd. But what I want people to know is I do have evidence. I have witnesses. And yet they can pretend that none of this exists. And so they have to do, they can't kill me. I've managed to get out of a wheelchair twice now. I have double vision and some other problems, but I'm alive. And I want Lee Oswald's name cleared and exonerated. This man was a hero. So if they can't assassinate you physically, then they'll go after you, you know, after your character. They'll do a character assassination. For example, I've been criticized for raising dogs and selling them for $400 a piece, that they were mutts. But these dogs were trained service dogs to help people. And the ones that couldn't pass training, people bought them to help the program keep going. We were actually raising guide dogs for the blind. How can they turn a project where somebody's trying to help blind people for years, which I did for about a decade, into a scam of selling mutt dogs? So they will change things around and make you look terrible and never meet you. These people never met me. There's a whole list of them. And they go around doing this to everybody. They did it to Madeline Brown. They'll do it to anybody who comes out as a witness. You know, but there's a lot of power there. But you know something? The American people cannot be asleep forever. They need to know that it's important to know that Lee Oswald did not kill Kennedy and that he actually tried to save Kennedy's life. When they know this, then they're going to look, who covered this up and why did they do it then? And why will you see next year in 2013, another bunch of lies will be out there, and they have to do it every year, find something new. All these years, because every time they make these efforts, it gets uncovered that they don't, you know, they've made an error and they've made a lie and they've been discredited. So they have to do it all over again with some new effort. What I'm telling you, you listen to the witnesses and understand that we wouldn't have people saying who killed Kennedy all this time, except we have this ongoing cover up and it's hurt our country. These people have gone on to put us into wars, taken the Americans' family life, and they've thrown God under the carpet, and they've gone ahead and taken our Bill of Rights and shredded it to pieces. Put us.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there, Judith. We're out of time.
Yeah. God bless you, and thanks.
Well, thank you so very much for being with us this evening, Judith.
Okay. God bless you, and hope to see everybody there. Hope to shake your hand.
And that's of course going to be on the 4th of November, Saturday, the 24th, Saturday,
yeah,
right after
that's
Thanksgiving.
Correct.
God bless. Thanks very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we have some fascinating information on the assassination. Basically, we have a four-tape set. It's called the JFK Assassination. It includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald, a two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who had been the Pentagon liaison to the CIA, and of course he believes the CIA killed Kennedy. Fascinating two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who is no longer living. Lee Harvey Oswald is dead, and then of course the fourth interview on this tape set is with Dr. Crenshaw, who is a doctor who is at the Parkland Hospital when they brought in Kennedy. He was told, of course, that he would never finish his residency. He would never be able to get a job as a doctor if he told the truth of what he saw that time. And so for 25 years, he concealed what he learned until, of course, he was ready to retire as a surgeon. And then, of course, he gave us this interview, and you'll hear it, an interview with Dr. Crenshaw, and our four tapes set on the JFK assassination. Of course, Dr. Crenshaw subsequently died. So everybody on this four tape set is dead. But their information is vitally important to understand. There is a conspiracy at the highest levels of our government. We have another, certainly a two-hour, four-tape set on the Kennedy assassination, 2 hours of interviews with Madeleine Duncan Brown, who is certainly Lyndon Baines Johnson's mistress. And she tells about the meeting the night before the assassination, who was there when they planned the final murder of an American president. Fascinating information you're not going to get elsewhere. It's all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. The first tape set, the one that includes Lee Harvey Oswald and Dr. Crenshaw and Colonel Fletcher Prouty, is called JFK Assassination. The second one is called The Update on the JFK Assassination. Vitally important information, historical information, available by calling 1-800-544-8927. If you want to know about Vietnam, we have tape sets on Vietnam and certainly have a Vietnam special. And basically, of course, you have to understand that all during the Vietnamese War, we were funding the Russians, who were funding the North Vietnamese, who were funding the Viet Cong, who were killing our boys. This is all during the Second World War. We were funding the Nazis and building the weapons for them that were being used to kill our boys. And that's covered certainly in the book, America's Nazi Secret, by John Loftus. America's Nazi Secret by John Loftus. And we have a CD set of interviews with John Loftus called The War Against the Jews. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we funded the Nazis all during the Second World War. Why would we do that? You can't have a long and horrible and bloody war and kill a lot of people and have a lot of carnage unless you have a well-financed enemy. And that's exactly what we had. And, of course, we were funding the Nazis, who were, of course, committing the Holocaust, where they killed 6 million Jews and 12 million Christians. You'll never hear that mentioned about the 12 million Christians the Nazis slaughtered, but that's mentioned in the foreword to Norman Cohn's book, Warrant for Genocide. You can get it, used copies. Norman Cohn's book, Warrant for Genocide. How could these things happen and you're not hearing about them? Ladies and gentlemen, the media in America is controlled. The media in America is controlled, and most of what you think you know just isn't true. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to hear my talk on the dark secret and the forbidden secret. That's my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. My talk on the forbidden secret and the dark secret, and then my talk on Agenda 21, the covert plan. Now, the syllabus of all of those talks, you can get them or not. It's up to you. They're reduced price if you get them with the talks. But it's vitally important you understand the background of what's going on today, if there's going to be any hope of saving America. But the only thing that's going to save America, I believe, is a spirit's revival. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Please, please pray for Radio Liberty. To the mountains, to the prairies, to the
welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. Another one of those days that you probably won't forget. If you're just waking up and wondering, gee, what happened overnight? Well, get ready for an earful. Unbelievable. At least that is what most people are saying. This Petraeus affair has gotten worse and worse. But I want to tell you all, it is more than hell hath no fury like two women scorned. It is more than that. Nobody's really sure, but supposedly, as you all know, General Petraeus was having an affair with a woman named Broadwell. She was writing a book for him. And by the way, she had never written anything ever before, was doing her dissertation in college, and that's how she ended up writing a book for him? Well, maybe. Nobody's